Well, we wish you a good morning and welcome in. It's a Tuesday edition of My Car Guru, and we welcome in the car guru himself. Here he is, Lenny Lawson.
Hello, Tim.
Good morning.
Good to be with you this morning.
Glad to have you here.
We had so much fun yesterday, we just thought we'd just sit here and continue talking.
Why don't we just do it?
Yeah. We were going to talk about a couple things that we identified. One of the first things I want to talk about is quality. I asked Tim a question a few minutes ago. I said, what product do you have or use on a fairly consistent basis that when you grab it or put it in your hand or use it, you never doubt, you think about how well it's made and how well it functions, how well it does what it's designed to do. It's one of those things that you would not want to do without. You know, it has become a part of your life, and when you touch it, you feel good about it. I can think of several things that I have that are like that.
Well, I can think of something I used to use a lot that when I touched it, it was just to me high quality and I couldn't hardly do without it. And that was my Minolta camera back in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I would grab it, use it. I probably took over a million pictures with that thing because I was a big photography buff. Still am, but used to be a lot more into it than I was. And that thing, I used it so much, the shutter curtain, you know, had the little curtain inside of it. It completely wore out. It just disintegrated.
Yeah.
And I took it to a camera repair person, and he just kind of laughed about it at the time. This was many years ago, and he just said, we can't do much about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the TVs nowadays. You know, TVs are probably more expensive. The flat screen TVs are probably more expensive to fix than they are just to get a new one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You never hear of anybody fixing.
Right.
And that's, modern flat screens.
Sure. And that's the way this camera was. It was at the point to where it was just better to get another camera. And of course, at that time, that was when the cameras were changing a bit. And you remember the old Olympuses or whatever it was?
I was always a Canon guy.
Yeah, or whatever the camera was. They came out with a digital version, you know. And we thought it was something. You could take a picture and then look at it on the back of the camera and the little screen. And we thought, man, this is high tech. And now just look how far it's come. But camera related, I would say that. Now I would probably say it's my iPhone or smartphone.
Yeah.
We think about, well, there's just no way we could do without this. Well, of course we could if we had to. But now life has become to where it's like an appendage of our arm. It's like an attachment to our hand. We have to have it. And I feel like that they're at the quality now to where you can depend on them pretty much every day. Now, of course, things go wrong here and there, but not very often. Usually the biggest thing goes wrong with the smartphones is just the battery starts wearing out or whatever it may be.
And we get frustrated, right? When things that we have depended on all of a sudden don't work very well. You were talking about the flat screen TVs. I think about that. Okay, here's a modern appliance, right? That is a part of our life. It's the TV. Now, I remember when the TV was a piece of furniture in the house. It's not something that you hung on the wall like a picture above your mantle. It was something that went into your room that matched your decor and had doors on the front of it that you opened up and slid back. So, and there was within this piece of furniture was the TV, you know. Were they better built? You know, you think it's built inside of a piece of furniture and stuff. Is the quality better for that than it is for the flat screen that's on your wall? Well, the flat screen on your wall can do a lot more. You know, it all depends on what your definition of quality is. The Apple Watch, for example, that I have on my wrist, I don't need it, but I like to wear it because of all the different things it can tell me. You know, it can tell me how many steps I took today. It can tell me, it actually has an electrocardiogram built into it. You know, I can actually check my pulse and make sure I'm not in atrial fibrillation. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts. Is that how you define quality, or is that just usefulness? You know, I have my two favorite guitars. I have a Taylor that I play 90% of the time. But before the Taylor came along, I had a Martin D28, which I still have. Now, when I'm... The Taylor sounds better to my ear, okay? But when I put that Martin in my hands, I can feel the difference.
Yeah.
I can feel the quality. I mean, it just oozes out of that guitar. And so people become loyal for a lot of different reasons to different brands. Usefulness, reliability. You know, there's all different attributes that you could say that define quality for somebody, right? Now, you know, when it comes to place of manufacture, A lot of people determine the quality of a product based on where it was made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about if something is made here, tell me where here is where they have an incredible reputation for quality.
Mm-hmm.
Where would that place be?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say made in Indonesia? Would that say quality to you?
Probably not here, it would.
Okay. Maybe if you live in Indonesia.
Yeah, I was going to say if you live in
Indonesia. But universally in this country, if it said, for many years, if it said made in Germany, was it high quality?
Depends on what it is.
Camera. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even a car. I mean, look at Mercedes. Look at the reputation that Mercedes and Porsche and BMW and all those had.
Mm-hmm.
High quality, long-lasting, dependable vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it says made in the USA, you know, that has taken on a different definition over the years, hasn't it?
Because
now people appreciate it's kind of a patriotic attribute, right?
Yeah.
But made in USA, you can't believe how many companies that I buy stuff for my dealership for. You know, everything from lifts to diagnostic equipment, that all of a sudden made in USA is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to, if it said made in Japan,
mm-hmm.
if it was an electronic device, you say, oh, this has to be high quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at quality in the auto industry, there's been basically three phases in modern times since World War II. There was from 1950 to 1970 was a very interesting era in the car business. Because when you're talking about vehicle quality, cars suffered from glaring production defects in the 50s through the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The domestic auto industry could get by with that, though, Tim, because they had such a stranglehold on the industry as a whole. You know, from the 50s to 70s, the only foreign cars that really had any presence here were just for people like Triumphs and MGs and stuff like that, some Volkswagens.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really took them serious because Chevrolet, Ford, and Chrysler had such a stranglehold on the industry, they could build crappy cars and still sell them.
Yeah, except for the Edsel, which was only popular.
Well, some of those wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
What did made in Japan mean back then? It meant junk. You know, that was how people defined it. Ready to fall apart. You know, that's what a lot of people thought.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened after 1970. The Japanese turned around and developed some very high-quality manufacturing techniques, the Toyota production method.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these innovations that happened from a production standpoint were taught to them by Americans that went in after the war and helped to resurrect Japanese industry.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was a combination of the Japanese mentality and commitment towards work and these long-held manufacturing concepts that led the Japanese industry to dominate from a standpoint of quality in that region. We'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute.
All right. And we're back here, My Car Guru, for this Tuesday morning and talking quality today.
Okay, so there were basically three eras of quality, basically a period of time where quality went from one stage to another, and it was caused by a number of events. I was in, when I first got into car business, I got into the tail end of the first era of quality. This was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
When one of the hardest jobs in a dealership was being a service advisor, because quality was a big problem. They were trying to make the transition from very little emission controls on cars to very strict emission controls on cars. We went from Corvettes having 400 horsepower to having 180 horsepower because they were suffocated by all of the emission controls that were on the cars.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 20 customers that came into the dealership had hesitation problems, cold start problems, you know, with cars.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times people say, well, when I put my foot on the gas, it won't go. It hesitates. And it was tough, you know, and we created a lot of ill will back then because of that transition. But that was more or less government mandated. But I was also present for the second era, and that was when Honda and Toyota started to come in. I remember the first Honda dealership that came into Greenville. It was called Wheels Incorporated. Phil Bachman had the dealership. Eventually closed the point in Greenville and moved it to Morristown. I remember seeing my first Honda Civic and my first Honda Accord. And I kind of went, uh-oh. Here I am, a Chevrolet dealer, you know, and I'm selling Vegas and Monzas and Chevettes, and I see this little Honda Accord. It was kind of funny back then that manufacturers did interesting things. Like today they don't do this, but back then having an automatic transmission in a small car was a big deal. So in the left rear of the car, just above the taillights, there would be a sticker that said automatic. On the other side, it would say Honda. On this side, it says automatic. And then you would look on the steering wheel, and around the horn button on the steering wheel, instead of having a logo or something, it would say power steering on the steering wheel, you know, just in case, Mr. Customer, you buy this car 3 years from now, you forget that the car has power steering. We're going to put it on here to remind you.
There you go.
But the Japanese came in, and people started buying them. You know, they said, wow, this is a quality vehicle, and they would drive it. And the only time they'd have to take it into the service department was to get the oil changed. They weren't braking. You know, they didn't have all these quality issues. And so all the they just started eating away at production. It didn't take long before the Honda Accord and the Toyota Camry were the top two selling passenger cars in the country. You know, for a while, Ford came out with the Taurus, you know, and the Taurus did really, really well for a long time. At one time, it was the best-selling car. Not the best-selling vehicle, but the best-selling car. And it was outselling the Accord and the Camry, but it didn't last. And so this second era of quality, the Japanese kept getting better, and the domestics kept trying to catch up with the Japanese. And they could not get the quality thing down. You know, the J.D. Power measures incidents or, you know, problems per 1,000 vehicles, okay? And, you know, when you looked at the ratings that consumers were giving to these car companies, all of a sudden you saw these names like Honda, Toyota, Datsun, Subaru, all migrating towards the top, and all of the domestic car companies going down towards the bottom of the list. But they still didn't catch on. You know what the domestics started doing? They started buying companies. You know, like Ford bought Mazda. You know, other companies started acquiring. You know, they tried to buy this technology rather than trying to reinvent themselves. They would just buy the ones that were building better quality cars and start selling those under a different name. You know, Chevrolet did the same thing with Geo. Remember Geo?
Yeah, the Storms and the.
Yeah, they started buying. We started buying vehicles from Isuzu. And Daewoo and different companies like that, and you know, because they couldn't build a quality small car, so they started buying them from them and then rebadging it as a domestic brand, and that didn't work either. So finally, the third generation or the third era had finally arrived when the domestic automakers started catching on. They started changing their process. They started sending their executives, their production executives, to training schools to try to learn how to build cars the way the Japanese build cars. Now, I remember when Honda first came to the United States with an assembly plant, it was in Marysville, Ohio, and they were building motorcycles. And then they started building passenger cars up there. And, you know, I'm so grateful today that the manufacturers that I represent, but Nissan, for example, you know, they moved their world headquarters or their national headquarters to Nashville, Tennessee, and they started building those hard body trucks. You remember the little Nissan trucks? They called them hard bodies. Built them in Smyrna, Tennessee. And now most of their production is in Alabama, and for the domestic use anyway, is in Alabama and Tennessee. But this third era that we're in right now is where now the playing field is level from a quality standpoint, Tim. We figured it out, you know, from a domestic auto industry. We finally figured out. We taught the Japanese how to do it. They taught us how it's done, and now we've learned how to do it, okay? And so you can buy just about anything out there, just about anything, and it's a quality product. It does what it's built to do. You don't have to take it to the shop all the time. It has long maintenance intervals. Yes, occasionally you'll have a vehicle that will break, but that happens with Honda as well. That happens with Toyota, but the frequency of problems is way down now compared to what it used to be.
Yeah,
because that is the expectation. Quality is the expectation now. You know, you and I were talking about the phone, going from the flip phone to what we have right now in our pockets and what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just phenomenal what this thing can do. It's like a piece of glass, and we, you know, first thing we do, instead of enjoying the way it was designed, we wrap it. We put these protective coverings on it and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, and we do all this, these things to protect our vehicle, our phone vehicle. And so, you know, quality is a big deal. And then you have the warranty side of things, and I want to talk about that. We'll talk about that after the break.
And we're back here for the final portion of My Car Guru on a Tuesday. You know, you were talking about the playing field being leveled in car brands. I remember a few years ago, even, for instance, Hyundai, you know, mm-hmm. people would talk about Hyundais, and most people talked about them like, well, I wouldn't buy a Hyundai.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
a piece of junk. But now...
It was.
It seems like now, you know, it's come up to... where
very high quality.
Pretty high quality.
Yes,
yeah.
And very impressive. Mm-hmm. But then you have to start looking at other areas. And that's things like driving dynamics, fuel economy, overall performance. You know, one of the best current illustrations of the phenomenon of this evolution of quality is, for example, Ford has had tremendous leaps in the number of measures of initial manufacturing quality, especially in some of the models like the Edge and the Escape,
mm-hmm.
Several other vehicles, the F-150, for example. At the same time, Toyota has been bungling its performance in factory quality lately. You know, it's forced the company to issue a large number of recalls. You know, over the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen just bukus of Toyota Tacoma trucks with the frames just rotting and having to be either the entire frame rotting from rust
mm-hmm.
and have the entire frame replaced, or have some kind of issue. You know, this is where warranties are so important to ensure that the consumer is going to be taken care of over a period of time. Unfortunately, most new car warranties aren't really that long compared to the usable life of a car. I mean, to me, the usable life of a car now, without a lot of money having to be spent, if you properly maintain it, change the oil, you know, do all the things you're supposed to do, don't wreck it and so forth, just drive it and maintain it, mm-hmm. is 250,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
In 1970, it was 100,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much better cars have gotten.
Oh, yeah. I remember when, back then, when I was a kid, people say, well, you know, if I can get 100,000 miles out of this car, I'm doing great.
Yep. Now, a lot of products have a very long shelf life, as we say. A lot of the cars that were designed and built two decades ago are still on the road today. The warranty, is typically not long enough. It does not match the useful life of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
3 years, 36,000 miles is about it. Now, there are some companies that have extra warranty protection, longer warranty protection. Like, for example, the Nissan Titan, it has a powertrain warranty up to 100,000. We buy a special policy for our customers to buy cars from us, buy it on every vehicle, so it's a very low cost. And that allows them to get a lifetime powertrain warranty on their vehicle. So that's a pretty long warranty, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it does not cover the things that typically break. You know, your engine, transmission, drive axle, all of that will be covered. So that's good. Those are expensive things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if your air conditioning quits, or if you have a problem with the power seat, any electronics on the car, steering, cooling system, whatever, anything peripheral to the engine is not covered mm-hmm. under the powertrain warranty.
Yeah.
You know, I want consumers to understand that if you have a warranty and you go beyond the warranty, but you have a failure fairly close to that time, if it's a major failure or a minor failure, if you go to the dealer in the right spirit, typically you can get things covered. What is the right spirit? It's not being a jerk.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's going in and saying, listen, I've been a good customer. Here's all my maintenance records. I have it all done with you. Can I get this covered? Have the work done at the dealership. Be a loyal customer to the dealership. I don't care where you're buying your car. Because if you ever have a major failure and you defected from the dealership and you never had any work, never darkened the door of the place, and then you come back for major help,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get it.
Right.
Because it is a discretionary decision. They don't have to do anything.
Right.
It's a discretionary decision for them to help you. So if you are a loyal customer and they can prove that to the manufacturer say, hey, let's fix this. Let's take care of this.
Yeah.
And I've seen them step up. I've seen them put engines in cars when a vehicle was out of warranty.
Wow.
Transmissions, you know, just major repairs. If it involves a maintenance item, you're not going to get any help. You know, if it's brakes, belts, hoses, you know, fuel lines, any kind of thing like that, you're not going to get any help. But if it's a major component, you can get some help if you've been loyal to the dealership. Does that cost extra money? I don't think so. I think in the long term, it's going to cost you less. You know, people defect for different reasons, but one of the best reasons to stay with the dealer is because if you have a failure, they're going to be able to step up and help you.
All right, there you go. That'll do it for My Car Guru this Tuesday morning, and we will talk to you tomorrow.